My name is Leonora Mayangadze, and I'm the program producer for Somerset House Studios. AGM is usually our biggest annual event. It doubles as the studio's birthday party, where we invite an audience of up to 600 people to take over the building, explore the spaces, engage with new commissions, performances, and DJ sets in every single corner of the building. It's our house party. That's what it is usually. COVID hit in March 2020 and a lot of our public program migrated online. We started commissioning artists to make work from home or using the means that they had wherever they were. The curatorial approach for AGM this year was an interesting one. We invited a select panel of studios artists past and present to select artists who they're really excited by, as a way to share our resources and expand our network by working with artists who previously weren't directly connected to the studios. This felt like an important way to mark a really tumultuous year, but it was an important to center collaboration in this way. Over the next hour, you'll hear from Beatrice Dillon alongside some of the artists that she selected to contribute to the AGM program this year. These artists include Ryan Trainor, DeForest Brown Jr., and Sarah Wilde.
So I was invited by Somerset House Studios to commission an artist to make new work for the annual performance event called AGM. And with everything that's sort of happened this year, I wanted to use that commissioning or curating opportunity to work with an artist that I thought would respond kind of sensitively to the sort of intensity of this year. So three artists immediately came to mind, but I was actually originally asked to just select one. I was kind of inspired by the decision that the Turner Prize winners last year made to share the prize equally between four people. So rather than have one winner, to actually have four winners, if you like. And I wondered if we could take a similar kind of stance with this. So I felt it was more important to expand this opportunity to three people rather than just select one person. Although it's really sad for artists and audiences to have been split apart this year, I guess one of the benefits of online presentations of work is that the reach is potentially much greater. So I thought it would be exciting to work with artists who weren't London-based or even necessarily based in the UK to participate. So I put forward DeForest Brown Jr., Ryan Trainor and Sarah Wilde as artists who I thought would respond in an interesting creative way to the commission from Somerset House Studios. I guess my role or involvement in this evening is of curator, but it's mostly as a fan of these artists' work. Unfortunately, because of the situation with live performance right now, the artists responded with a series of three filmed works. I really enjoy their work and the kind of political ethos that underpins their approach to music making, art making, whether it's across music or writing or curating. Ryan is focused on using the computer to make fluid rhythm and pattern ideas. I really like the fact he takes such care in the sounds he uses. He's got his own palette and sense of rhythm and fun about his music. It's light and minimal with no filler. I love it. Ryan's very open with his ideas and generous, and he likes to share ways of thinking about music and making music, and that feels generous and positive, and this piece reflects that, I think.
I'm Ryan Trainor. I'm an artist from Rotherham in the UK, and I make like computer music, club music, algorithmic sort of process, computer music, I don't know. Yeah, like algorithmic music, I guess. And I kind of develop software and tools to enable those types of things. And that sort of led me onto these workshop type projects over lockdown, and specifically trying to figure out ways to enable remote participation or remote collaboration. Yeah, my connection with Somerset House was through Beatrice, and yeah, we've just been in contact for a while, sharing music and stuff like that. And actually, when we met in Castleton a few years ago in this, she was doing an installation in this cave, which is basically, I think it's called the Devil's Arse. And I think we'd been in touch before, but we'd never really met. And then she was setting up this installation. She needed a hand. And I was actually there, like, setting up my dad's installation in the cave. He wasn't there. So I just ended up helping her and, like, running around this... I think it's called the chandelier room, or, like, vault. You know, like, the biggest room in the cave. And I had this, like, speaker on my hand running up these walls. And she's like, don't know, more to the left, more to the right. And then after that, we're like, oh, we should do some more projects. The piece is called the Intersymmetric Workshop for AGM. It's come out of this wider project that we're calling Intersymmetric Work, so it just made sense. The basic idea of the project was to do this remote collaborative stuff. Yeah, so I work using this software called MaxMSP, which is like a graphical programming environment. And within that, you can kind of, well, I make like drum machines and sort of pattern generating systems. Over lockdown, me and Mark Fell, who's my dad, we've been working on this collaborative project with some specific technologies that have just been made available in like this newest version of Max. We connect to a server and we're able to share patches and interfaces in real time. So somebody could be over in Australia and we could be here in Rotherham, and I could have like a drum grid and turn events on and off, and we could both see them changing in real time. Before coronavirus were a thing, like, oh, I'm going to do some more workshops in Rotherham this year. Well, then lockdown happened. That led to the idea of, oh, trying to develop a technology that people can collaborate from home in real time. Then we made that technology. It's so simple, and like, if you think about it, gaming, there's millions of kids playing all these games together and links up in that way. The technology is available. This like project is a fraction of that complexity. It's all it's really like. It's like sending text messages to a group or something. That's how simple it is. You send pattern data, which is maybe like zeros and ones, like on, off, on, off. And then all those patterns are generated locally on the machines, on your computer. So it's kind of, you know, like, oh, what groups could we possibly work with? Like, okay, let's work with Brit schools. Like, oh, that's perfect, let's do that.
Oh, yeah, do that.
Then that's signal
to fight.
Yeah, which one do you want?
The performance was happening outside of school time, which then meant it couldn't be a live performance either. So we ended up doing a performance that was pre-recorded and then played. 5 participants go around their school, record loads of different sounds, yeah, various types of things like field recording exercises.
Well, we met him, obviously. Yeah, learned about like his process, I guess. But we went around school and recorded a bunch of sounds, so that he could like manipulate them and like edit them for the software. A lot of like, I don't know, metal scraping on things and like machines, like, you know, kind of boiler sort of sounds from machines in the main block.
And there's quite a few like metal poles lying around that we use to kind of scrape on the fence and scrape on the ground. But because of the school setting, there was always kind of like a background school sound of people and classrooms in the background, which I think Ryan seemed to think was interesting because it showed kind of the school, the sound of a school, I suppose. It's kind of impossible to get rid of that background noise.
Because he was like change the perspective of the sound, I don't know. So like I did one where I put the microphone inside a locker and it like unlocks the locker and like locked it back in. So he's yeah, I remember him saying think about how you could like put the sound like where your ear can't go, kind of thing.
Ryan took a lot of the perhaps sounds that were a bit messy and he made them shorter and got rid of like voices and maybe got rid of some of the background noise, and then he got all of these sounds and kind of put these into a collection. I remember maybe it was 100 or so, maybe more, into this sequencing cloud software that he'd made. Each of us participating had an iPad which connected in some way to each other, and we could kind of create a sequence of sounds in a, I think, 16 step, turning on or off each kind of node, which would indicate that a sound would play on that particular beat. And then with that, we'd also have, Ryan explained, three different bars, which included the sound that was playing. So it would, depending on where you scrolled with your finger, it would extract a different sound from the main hub computer laptop type thing. And then also the other parameters were the length, the pitch of the sound. So moving the length would change how long the sound was, so it could cut it short or it could keep the full sound, as well as the pitch as well. So Ryan kind of explained how all of this software worked, and we had to get around a few networking issues and some lagging and crashing here and there, but eventually we got into a workflow that worked for us.
I hadn't really, like, I don't listen to that much sort of abstract music. I don't know how to describe it, so kind of experimenting with it and kind of creating our own soundscapes was really fun.
See, we all know that sounds around us, but it's not as like prominent, like especially like going around school and just realizing, oh, like these sounds are actually like, they're like here all the time. Like now in the classroom, I'm like, oh, like I recorded that sound. You don't realize the sounds, but once you've recorded them, you can hear them more. So I think I'll definitely be experimenting with sound more.
Using those sounds, we like edit them or compile them together and put them in the software that I'd made, which is basically like a simple drum machine. Each participant can have an iPad each to then control one channel within that drum machine. I was quite interested in figuring out possible ways to use sort of like kind simple sort of rule-based structures that led to different types of interactions. So whether that be some, when your screen is green, you do this, when it's red, don't do that. Started developing little rules like that together. So like at one point someone was responsible for adding notes, and then another person was responsible for deleting notes. It was more like process driven in a way. That was kind of what I was interested in. We wanted to perform it in all different parts of the school. So we were suggesting like to do it in the dinner hall or to do it in the corridors, outside or in the gym. Dave, who was facilitating it, he works at Brit School, but he's an artist himself and he makes music and does all this kind of intervention music performances, like playing music from the back of a van and things like that. So we were getting off that idea, said, oh yeah, they should do it like in all these random places within the school. I'm not really sure what I would have liked audiences to get from it. I guess one thing that I'm sort of, I guess, concerned with right now or churning over a bit is the idea of streaming and like how, or disconnecting that is between performer, audience, just the screen in front of that. Yeah, that's one reason why I'm feeling like these kind of participatory works are more relevant or something that I'm more interested in doing anyway. Another thing is that it was like totally improvised as well, so you can really feel that things are being pushed or pulled spontaneously. It's like, oh, they are actually doing something. they're thinking and on the feet or changing those materials in that moment or as it's happening. In this context of like digital media, we do actually have the capacity to be able to make works for a much wider audience. The internet's a much bigger venue than any physical venue. So we have got the capacity to make works that maybe connect with a million people or a billion. It's not gonna happen, but we could do that. In a way, it sort of has the opposite effect where there's so much going on. It's very disengaging and isolating, actually. So, like, rather than trying to make something for this mass thing, I think in this, like, chaotic, noisy environment, it's actually, I find it more meaningful to do smaller, more focused things that, yeah, maybe a couple of people actually get something out of. Like, that's what I was thinking about doing all this stuff before lockdown anyway, of like working with kids in Rotherham and what kind of impact can you have. Like, around here, like, lots of people don't actually have that many opportunities, and like some of the kids that I grew up with were the most talented people but couldn't actually get through it all, really. And it was like, it actually means a lot to me to, in another respect, it's like doing art and creative stuff, it really is an opportunity to get out of that dead end. And it's like, these types of things, it's not just about like recreational people going out and being hedonistic and like whatever. It's like actually young people having access to ideas that make them think that there might be another way of doing something, or like not just being part of the dead end thing. If I could like do a few workshops with some kids saying, look, you can do this stuff, you should try it. It's like actually not unfathomable. Thank you.
I think DeForest music is super dynamic and fluid. The way the percussion is used as this kind of springing, bouncing energy across the speakers, it just feels really alive and exciting to me. It's really difficult to make computer music sound that kind of dynamic and exciting and full of life. I feel like it kind of sits in a sort of jazz lineage. You can hear the sort of dynamic patterns of someone like Hamid Drake or even Baby Dodds, or even the kind of tension and atmosphere of Charles Hayward. And then you get these beautiful, expansive, sort of Detroit-sounding synth textures mixed with this really powerful layered speech sampling.
A bourgeois art and an anti-people art.
During the 60s, black separatists, nationalists, now communist Marxist, Maoist.
Straight out. No writer or artist wishing to serve the people could ever uphold, justify, or fail to attack capitalism, racism, and women's oppression.
I wonder if he's going to say anything horrible. He's going to declare the revolution now. How should I react to this?
Art with it is the red aim. Yes, star art with it is the red aim.
I'm DeForest Brown Jr. I consider myself a rhythm analyst, which is a type of philosophical study born out of French philosopher Henri Lefebvre. He kind of developed it with a few other people, but it's a study of like urban spaces and the rhythms of those urban spaces. Coming from the South, Alabama, and just the South in general, what we would have called like the Confederacy States before the Civil War was like kind of a different country that was powered by slave labor, versus the Northern Union states that were closer connected to like the UK and Europe, and those were the industrial states. So as a like black person who has moved to New York up to the North, I am kind of like studying all of these sort of luxury city structures that didn't necessarily come down south. You have a lot of kind of like anti-futurists, if you will, that are trying to establish America as like a free market republic. And so my work as a rhythm analyst is kind of carrying on the traditional like griot technique of like inhaling the entire history of the Black Belt South, which is where the like black people come from. It's from the soil there. And I always say that like, I mean, there's a phrase black as a country, but I always say that like if black people in America were to receive any reparations, it would be in that Black Belt region down south. So my work is kind of like taking this story and this sort of prophecy of the South will rise again after the Civil War, and I tried to kind of prophesize it across the North and over back into Europe, but as of like, really as of the elections, or really as of 2016, but it's too late. So I'm kind of in like the afterglow of having like, you know, spilled the whole history. So that work like plays out in a lot of different ways. Like I've been working on my first book, Assembling a Black Counterculture, which is coming out next year through Primary Information, which is like going to be an entire history of African-American peoples in America, a history of techno music, and it's like a sort of eventual exportation and whitewashing. And I consider techno to be like a kind of liberation technology, in the sense that if you consider the circumstances of like Black Americans as like slaves, you were not allowed to read and write. Once you get to a sort of point where a 19-year-old Juan Atkins can touch like an 808 drum machine, You're talking about something very different from like dance music. Like we're talking about some really weird, like eugenic, like it's kind of a Frankenstein story. And so, yeah, I've been digging into this history and trying to make music as speaker music, like out of this history, and like, and not making dance music, but making electronic music as like a kind of Frankenstein character, like trying to like really like feel it. But also writing this history. And yeah, so my work does a lot of things, but I guess most specifically, I try to elucidate or like kind of define the term black as like an infinite possibility that is like completely imperceptible to the white European like Enlightenment era like logistics. Like no logic or reason or like philosopher can like make sense of of like what Sun Ross, like what he was trying to say about heliocentric worlds, like, and the fact that he's from Birmingham, from where I'm from, and my dad, like my parents went to the same college as him, and like it just, yeah, my work is trying to just absorb all of this and like unleash it upon the world. We said that we work with anybody that's going to pull this, anybody that has revolution on their mind. We're not a racist organization because we understand that racism is an excuse for capitalism. We know that racism is just a byproduct of capitalism. Everything would be all right if everything was put back in the hands of the people. We're going to have to put it back in the hands of the people. Everybody in the state of Illinois. We're going to have to get involved first, and around, and we're going to have to get more of a job. We're going to have to move on. We're going to have to start practicing, and that's very hard. We're going to have to start learning, and you learn through practice. You got to start making mistakes, and you learn through making mistakes. We got to start getting out there with the people, and a lot of times we think we're better than the people that's in it, so that's criminal. Thank you, better than the people. I left Alabama in 2013. So after I like dropped out of college, that's a whole story. Yeah. But I saw things. Like, I was listening to kind of, like, Beatrice Dillon, like, in college and kind of after college, and was watching a lot of things happening over in the UK and Europe. So, like, Somerset House as it was emerging, listening to NTS, like, watching Boiler Room, and all of this stuff was, like, so far away. Like, there was no electronic music, no, like, I don't want to say no culture in Alabama, because that's not true. Like, there's a lot of, like, folk music and stuff, but, like... Like, I went to college with the Alabama Shakes and the Civil War. It's, like, those two bands. So, like, that's the culture there. But, yeah, I guess I would say I just have a connection, like, as a fan of, like, all of these people from, like, yeah, foreign lands, if you will. So it's been really interesting to, over the course of my career, kind of, like, interface with these people and places. Especially Beatrice Dillon in general, she did a record with the guy Rupert Clavo called Two Changes. That's like one of my like favorite records ever, and really kind of opened me up to the idea that maybe it was okay to like explore electronic music as like a form of jazz. So I tried to bring that, I guess, yeah, to AGM and performing. So it's called A Bitter But Beautiful Struggle, and it comes from a random... I actually don't know when Martin Luther King actually said that. Yeah, A Bitter But Beautiful Struggle kind of just like fell on my tongue one day, and it really sums up the last 400 years of like the African-American like hostage situation in the United States. And I don't think a lot of people think of Black people that way, but I mean, when you kidnap people, you know, shuttle them off into like, you know, a giant continent and like hold them on a plantation, don't allow them to read and write, you feed them like slop and beat them. It's one of those things where, sure, you can free those people, but with the economic disparities being the way it is, I mean, by design, yeah, it's a beautiful struggle because we're still here. And there's a section in the video where, like, you see the marching band come out, and that's where my parents went to college, and where Sun Ra was in that band when he had, like, that epiphany to start, you know, speaking to Saturn and to start this Afrofuturist journey. So it was important to me to kind of have this cathartic moment of, like, Southern, of distinct Southern Black history kind of, like, play out where... Yeah, after you go through, like, the Martin Luther King speech, you go through, like, Daquan Dyson kind of lecturing about ecological liberation, you have this, like, yeah, marching band kind of emerge, and, like, I wanted to kind of pose that marching band as, like, a Black militant force, where, like, you see this Black unity of people just, like, I mean, you see the different factions, like, the drum majors dancing, and, like, the dance girls come, and, like, they have a whole routine, and then suddenly the whole band, like, you have these, like, people marching and stuff, and then suddenly the whole band breaks out into this ecstatic. Yeah, I wanted to make a video and a record that just could sum up what that feeling of pride and despair that I have in the last 400 years. Because it's a weird thing. It is bitter and beautiful. I guess I would kind of refer to British theorist Kodwo Eshin. His ideas of like sonic fiction have been really inspirational to me for a long time. And I just wanted to try to scan as much of this information into people's heads as possible by like kind of grabbing their eyes with like, by putting them in this, like the space of where I make the music. My partner set up mini cameras to like sort of make sure they get this all really documented, and but also using archival footage to kind of play out linearly so that people could sort of maybe see what I'm seeing and feel what I'm feeling as I'm like playing this music in real time. And so the hope is that by the end they feel crushed and open and reflective. I never know if art does or can do the thing that one hopes it to do, but I guess specifically if you want to like, in a neat nutshell, I'm kind of a black radical that's using music as like, as my device, as my weapon of choice, and hopes to like scramble people's brains and kind of wake them up from the last like 60 years of like Cold War into neoliberal like BS. Like they just like wake up and go like, oh wait, like maybe capitalism is bad. Maybe I don't need that new car. You know, maybe it's all a scheme. Maybe like we should be talking to like, you know, the black people that and the various like diasporic people we've been hurting and like understand what we've built. Cause I mean, the crash affects everybody, right? Something I try to do a lot in my music is work with like, I call it like Z-axis. Like you have like the X and Y axis of like kind of vertical and horizontal sight and sound. But I try to do things on the Z-axis where it's like right in front of you and kind of like in very particular spots of your perception. There's definitely a lot of layering happening in a way where I'm trying to like, I would say that if everyone is living in kind of a hallucination, I'm trying to perform Inception by placing just, yeah, little things in the brain, kind of connecting some like dots and creating like, yeah, you're just like brain scrambled afterwards. And I mean, that's what techno in its form does. It just like, everyone hears like the four on the floor, but like if you listen to like what Juan Atkins was doing initially, there was a lot of stereophonic stuff happening that he was pulling from people like Jimi Hendrix, who was one of the first people to mess with like the mixing board in a way where the sound would start to blend and mesh. And Coltrane would also do this where he would, John Coltrane, where he would do the sheets of sound thing where he'd like throw one sound to the back of the room and like wait for the note to revert back and then cast out another note to meet it to then create like this like, this harmony, but it sounds like there's multiple Coltranes like playing at a time. is the key part of my career. And because this is the year that the collapse was supposed to happen, I thought it was going to be an economic and social one, but instead we get this COVID, like coronavirus, that like completely ends the scientific revolution. Like the fact that this many people have died of COVID around the world means that science doesn't work. Like sure, we can get a vaccine and fix it. Sure, we can, you know, we can mitigate it and like, and say, you know, and the scientists can say we fought as hard as we can, but like, no, we've seen a full technological, political, scientific failure. We've finally seen white male colonialism. We've seen the patriarchy, like, on its knees, like, and honestly, that's what the American presidents look like. That's what Trump versus Biden look like. Like the American dream, like, hobbling to the state podium and going, like, we can go to the future. And it's like, the future's gone, buddy. Like, so 2020, for me, has been a year of transforming my art practice into something really, it's kind of a, it's the chickens coming to roost. It's like all these seeds that I planted across my life, like I finally get to use all of my techniques. And unfortunately, I've been telling people that like, if I had a plan D, which I did for this year, I'm on like plan Z now. Like America's done everything wrong, just possible. And like, even with like the sort of impending race war stuff, like with the problem, like I'm just like, wow, all of it's happening.
Sarah World is a great DJ from Glasgow and a really important curator of UK-wide music events. And I've been a fan since we met in Glasgow in 2016. And I try and follow their work as much as I can. Sarah did a mix earlier on this year for Radio Alhara, featuring mostly artists of Arab, Caribbean, African descent, which is a really incredible mix. I really highly recommend you check that out. I hope one day we can get to hear Sarah's own music, because I think they're definitely one to watch.
So I am Sarah Wild. I am a DJ, artist, curator, a bunch of other things. I am joining you from Marrakesh. I came here to visit friends and family, and I'm choosing to stay here because of sunshine and lesser restrictions and safer all around. Yeah. My biggest influences and where I get my most of my inspiration from is from people I collaborate with. They are usually marginalized artists, so folk who are usually black or brown, LGBTQ plus, or from a working class background and work within arts and music. Those groups of people are people who I identify with and who matter to me the most. So that's where I draw my inspiration from an artistic process, I guess, because I worked as a curator and a booking, like a club booker for so long before I ever became a DJ. The process is very much influenced with working from behind the scenes, being very hands-on, being very much like the person working behind the scenes, and then now being the person performing and at the forefront and connecting the two somehow. So I draw a lot of my influences from like past work and my career thus far, going from someone who was very much hands-on and books people. My mental health is a huge factor in my daily life, right? It affects everything I do. So when you ask that, I guess I'm thinking of when I first started, I was just stressed about making things happen and creating opportunities and hiring people that I felt weren't getting enough limelight on them or not getting paid enough or not getting enough recognition. So most of my work was that. And then now I've got imposter syndrome like no other, where regardless of how many people tell me I'm incredible, it's just never, it doesn't register in my brain for some reason. So I think that's the main link between the two, is like this weird struggle, but at the same time, it's part of the journey, right? It's what makes it special, is the feeling that carries you of just like working my ass off to make things happen. And then now working my ass off to make things happen for myself. And the main thing they have both in common is that I'm constantly pushing myself mentally.
You're locked into Somerset House Studios. I am Sarah Wilde. We're streaming from, well, pre-recording from Marrakesh. Here with a wonderful group of friends.
So with Somerset House Studios, I've kept an eye out on you guys for so long. You know, you've got like a bucket list of things that you want to do. And Somerset House Studios was definitely something that I wanted to either do a residency there or like collab with someone who worked there, or basically some of my favorite artists have come through Somerset House. Beatrice, I've been a fan of that woman for the longest time. I first saw her play at the Cheetah in Glasgow a couple of years ago. I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago. And I went up to her after our set and was just like, you're incredible. Like, she was just so insane. I just rated everything about her, just being queer herself and just very quiet and to herself. But her stance and political stance and her beliefs are very much there. Like, I don't think anyone like her would keep an eye on someone like me if they weren't on the right path. Do you know what I mean? If they didn't care about inclusivity and showcasing like vocal, like politically forward thinking people, you know? So I've rated her as an artist for the longest time. And then I went up to her after her gig, was like, I love your set. And then she was like, thank you. And it was just like a crowded club. And then we just kind of followed each other on social media. And anytime I was in London, we'd like link up, or if she was in Edinburgh, we'd link up. She's someone I respect a lot. So when she, like, this is what I'm saying by imposter syndrome. When someone like her comes to me and is like, you're so cool, like, you're amazing, you're so talented, I'm like, you're mad. But no, Beatrice is the sickest person in the game, like, in the art world, and, like, the merge between the two, you know, within electronic music and the art world, she's a rock star in both, for sure, for me. So for AGM... and it would like for you to do an experimental set. And I think I just drew my inspiration from that. So it's basically a bunch of like music that I wanted to play but didn't get a chance to or couldn't for various reasons. Putting it together, I tried not to overthink it too much because then I think I would have freaked out. I tried to, like, my favorite thing to do as a performer or as a DJ or as an artist is doing things live and in the moment. And COVID's kind of like stopped that from happening. So I tried to treat it as I would if I showed up to the club and had a USB of like 100 sounds and then like played very much off of the vibe of the room and what was happening there and who was present and like the back and forth conversation you'd have when you were playing music. Let me see how I feel in this setup, which was Jnen Temizna is where I recorded it. They were kind enough to give me the space, and then I had my partner and a couple of friends in front of me, and one of them, for example, is like a really great DJ and a good friend of mine, and so having her there kind of like drew out the more like jungly bassy stuff out of me. My partner being there, they're Moroccan, so I ended it with like a North African track, and the frustration I felt by not being able to create for so long and then like it coming out in this like 1 hour recording. What I hope for the audience is to take from my work, I hope they felt, I don't know, a little break from everything that's happening around them. A lot of the music I play is usually from artists that I've worked with and I'm connected to on some level. It's usually from someone who's like working class or black and brown or LGBTQ, or I try and center that in the music I play and then the people I feature, in that there was like no one sound, no one particular genre that showed up. And then also I was wearing a t-shirt that literally said destroy white supremacy, which is just, I don't know. I think the message was clear. DJing and like using other people's sounds and my own sounds is one thing, but creating sound from like you, that takes it out of me even more. So it's scarce, but it is out there. Moving from DJing to production, I already have. but nobody knows it because, again, imposter syndrome. So I have like a couple of tracks out, but they're under different aliases because I don't trust myself. They're like, yeah, I've got like a bunch of like free jazz tracks under like an alias if anyone can find them. But so I've already made work. I'm currently making two soundscapes for two artists that are based in Glasgow. And I did work for an artist called Ray Kamara. They're based in Glasgow as well, originally from London, and we created work together. So basically they created work for a gallery and I provided the soundscape for the gallery. It was Too Many Studios, it was a few years ago. But I have made work, I just don't highlight it. I don't push myself enough as like a producer or creator of like sounds, although I have done that. And like one, but again, like I told you, mental health. Glasgow's a weird one for me because I went through the whole like it being like a white male dominated scene, me doing loads of work with like, you know, my peers who wanted the same change to happen, which is like for how to have folk like us get the limelight and get the credit and create opportunities for ourselves. So from where it was 5 years ago, literally like barely any, like you count the amount of women involved in one hand, to like now there's like hundreds, black, brown, trans, like the change has been insane. So I'm excited to see where Scotland as a whole goes, because I feel like there's a lot of focus on London sometimes. No offense to London, but you know, there's other cities.
Yeah. She ain't worried about a thing. She not gonna answer that phone call when it ring. She just wanna say